just talking about this fight from last weekend. The card was pretty sparse, but the main event was really, really interesting. I was saying to the audience about how I think a lot of fight fans need a story, and Gilbert Burns presents a story. But do you think that he puts pressure on the UFC's welterweight division to try and mobilize? That some of these guys that have not been accepting fights, the Masvidals, the Connors, that all of a sudden they're kind of looking at this and saying, oh, wow, Gilbert Burns is here, and if we want to get a title shot, we might have to try and capitalize on this right away because he might jump us in the queue.
You know, it certainly doesn't hurt that. I mean, a guy coming up and winning, you know, these two fights in the way that he has in 2020, and in particular this one. I mean, this guy has fought twice now since the UFC had to go to empty arenas, and he's looked spectacular in both. I mean, he went down to Brazil, knocked out Damian Maia, and now this performance in his first main event. I mean, he's obviously doing great things for himself. As far as what it does on pressure on those guys, though, I mean, look, as great as Gilbert Burns has been, I mean, Conor McGregor and Jorge Masvidal are still the much bigger stars, you know, and the UFC is going to go to them first. But, of course, if the UFC has another option that it feels comfortable with, I mean, Gilbert Burns is not going to sell, obviously, anywhere near what Jorge or Conor would right now. But at least it does provide that other option of, like, hey, if we can't get a deal done with you guys, you know, at least we do have this option that may not be as good as you, but at least there is a backup plan in Gilbert Burns.
I understand a little bit more Connor's position because, again, he's still back in Ireland. He can't travel. And he really does have his pick of the litter in terms of whatever is going to make a ton of money. Everyone's going to want to fight Conor McGregor because of those pay-per-view buys. He can fight in multiple divisions. Like that, just knowing that he's not just going to automatically sign up for a fight with Usman, I get that. What's still confusing to me is Jorge Masvidal's position, because everything that I read and everything that I hear is that he's looking for a rematch with Nate Diaz, even though there's really nothing from that first fight to indicate that we need a rematch there. It was a really dominant performance. It was one that, I don't know, maybe shakes Nate for the rest of his career. Why do you think Masvidal hasn't basically just signed on the dotted line and taken a title fight with Usman?
I don't know. You know, it really depends on who you believe. You know, Usman has accused him of basically thinking, you know, he's looking around and saying, well, maybe he can take a fight against Nate Diaz that would actually, you know, probably be pretty comparable in terms of fans' interest. And for Jorge, it's an easier fight, you know. And so you put yourself in Jorge's shoes under that scenario and think, well, hey, if I could make about the same amount of money and it's an easier fight, and you know, the fans' interests are about the same, why wouldn't I take the easier fight? I mean, you could wrap your head around that theory. Meanwhile, Jorge is pointing the finger at Usman and saying that it's actually been Usman who's been asking for more money as a champion, and that's what the holdup has been. So I think at the end of the day, you know, you hear Dana White talk about it, and he was asked about it repeatedly this week. You know, myself and others, of course, you know, what's going to happen at this welterweight division? He's like, give us a second. You know, we'll get through it. We'll figure out a deal to make that fight, and I do think that that's what will happen. I think the UFC looks at that fight, at that matchup, and says that is the fight to make. You know, coming off of 2019, Jorge had one of the best years of anybody, and he should be fighting for a title. So I think they got that big event in July, July 11th. I still think that that's when we'll see Jorge Masvidal fight Kamaru Usman, but I could definitely be wrong. You know, we could see Gilbert Burns jump that line.
Yeah, I think that the sell to Masvidal in regards to the Diaz fight is simply, hey man, you've marketed yourself as the baddest guy in the UFC. Like, that's the thing that you're saying you are. And up to this point, that's really working. You have all this momentum in your career, but if you're not moving forward, then all of a sudden it really doesn't seem like you're doing that. I'm sure there are still casual fans out there who would want to see the Diaz rematch, but for the most part, the sport is built on, hey, are you fighting the best on best? Hey, are you taking a step forward? Are you progressing? And he's not exactly young. He's an older fighter, that these title opportunities are not just going to be there forever. You're probably going to have to pursue it now. So yeah, I would guess that you're probably right, that he's going to feel some impetus to get that thing done. But don't you feel like they just really need this welterweight division to come together pretty quickly? Because I was saying, I know that this was a free card, but even you look forward to next weekend, and it's not exactly stacked. It's not exactly what we've seen from earlier iterations. It's got a good main event. The co-main is, I mean, it's all right. It's not overly eye-popping. I don't think that that's exactly a huge casual seller. But do you think that the UFC can sustain this level of putting out a product when they have so many people that are overseas, they have so many people that have just already fought in the last month. They had Tony Ferguson take all that damage. It just seems like they're kind of starting to get a little sparse on bodies, especially when guys are fighting over money.
Yeah, I mean, it can feel like that short term until it doesn't, you know, and then until the negotiations go well, they turn around and they make deals. You know, right now that they're still talking to Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier. You know, when is that fight going to come together? They've been, you know, obviously John Jones and Dana White have been added in the public. You know, Adesanya can't fight right now, or they're trying to figure out exactly when he's going to fight because of, you know, the visa issues coming out of his part of the time. I mean, this is. I mean, let's not forget, like, the circumstances as they are. Yes, the UFC is back, but, you know, they're back in the sense of, you know, they were able to do what they did in Florida, which was, you know, I thought positive. They proved that they could bring the sport back and that they could continue to do so. And then they just got cleared to come back to Vegas literally last week, you know, and then that was the first card back. So I think I give them a little bit of you know, a free pass on when they come back. Their first pay-per-view isn't as strong because they've been dealing with, you know, the same thing that all of us have been dealing with, but these are very uncertain times. It's been hard to kind of map out your schedule. Now, though, the pressure does start to come back to say, okay, now you are back. You know, you just had this event now in Vegas. That's your home base. You know, you have this situation set up where you're going to be coming back on a regular basis on every weekend. So now let's see the quality of the card go up a little bit. And I think that the cards coming together right now, you know, over the next coming weeks are still a little light. You know, if you look at these main events, these aren't like crazy UFC fight nights that you know, would really draw a lot of ratings under normal circumstances. But as things kind of get back to, you know, quote-unquote normal, and these managers and these fighters have faith that, you know, these fights are going to go on, first of all, that they're safe, that they can start preparing. They can be like, okay, I'm going to get back in my gym now. I'm going to start getting ready for a fight. You're going to see the quality of the card go up, I think.
Well, this brings me to the next thing, which is, so John Jones is in the news. He wants more money. You just mentioned it, that there's potential that Usman wants more money. Do you think that this is an opportunity for stars, especially in the UFC, to change the pay scale a little bit, that they have a little bit more leverage because the UFC, I don't know if they need stars more than ever now, but they certainly need the ones that are available to them, that this actually could put quite a bit of pressure on Dana White and co. to say, okay, you know what, as much as we didn't really want to do this, we're going to have to shift our policies when it comes to pay for certain fighters because we need you guys. We can't afford to lose a John Jones. We can't afford to go two months longer without a Usman.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And, I mean, you do look around the sport and you see the guys are asking for more money. Whether or not it turns into this this bigger thing where it affects, you know, a lot of the other guys around just because it does change the pay structure like you're describing, I don't know. I mean, we've seen situations in the sport before where I thought that was going to be the case. And it just didn't happen. You know, I think that from what I've seen, you know, in past examples, it's just hard for these guys to all get on the same page. They're always continually doing it on a one-on-one basis, you know. So while it may be, you know, it may be good for, you know, the fighters who want to see the pay scale changed, that some of these higher profile guys happen to be doing it at the same time right now, they're still not, you know, combining and putting their efforts together and sort of getting on an aligned front. They're still doing it individually. So we'll see what happens in these case-by-case basis. I mean, Dana White does not look like he's going to budge at all with John Jones right now. You know, so if John is complaining about money, but at the end of the day, you know, Dana digs his heels in and says, okay, fine, you know, we'll do Blachowicz versus Dominic Reyes. I mean, that's not what is good for the company, but I've seen Dana White do, you know, make decisions like that before. And then if John comes back eventually and fights, you know, Adesanya or fights, you know, someone in light heavyweight division or whatever the case is, it's really not going to change anything in terms of the grand scheme of the pay structure. It's going to be an individual basis involving John Jones. So, you know, does that make sense? So I think it's interesting that a few of them are happening simultaneously right now. But until we see a big kind of unified front, I'm always going to kind of bet against some major significant change to the pay structure because, you know, we've kind of seen this play out before.
Yeah, I just, the Jones one especially confuses me just from the UFC's perspective because, okay, I get that all negotiations generally start with hard lines. Like, we're seeing that in baseball right now, right? It's like, you come with your offer, I'm going to come with mine, and both of them are going to be pretty extreme, and hopefully we end up settling somewhere in the middle. But with Jones, like, if he's asking for Deontay Wilder money, to me it's almost at the point where I don't really understand the case against it, that he's I don't know how you make an argument that he's not the greatest pound for pound fighter in UFC history that doesn't involve the PED stuff, which at this point, you know, we're talking about picograms and you have to get into all this science, just that this deep dive into what exactly may have affected him. And then even if you counter that, well, look at just what his lifestyle was and his ability to step into the octagon and perform that way, despite having all of the mental challenges and all the added stress in his life and the partying schedule. For me, he's the greatest of all time. So you have your best fighter ever who is just going to walk away from the sport. And it's not even just about losing John Jones. It's that he still hasn't been knocked off the top of the mountain. And you have all these fights where, if you want to talk about star making and the potential to actually propel people into new heights of stardom, he's your guy. You get an Ngannou fight, he beats Ngannou, it seals his legacy. He loses to Ngannou, you have a massive superstar who you can count on for huge heavyweight paydays for what, the next 3, 4, 5 Ngannou fights? What is the reasoning behind the UFC not wanting to just give this guy a payday? What do you know about what exactly it is he's asking for and why the UFC wouldn't accommodate that?
Well, for starters, the UFC is always going to be a little bit, there's always going to push back. And that's just the nature of the sport. I mean, that's the model that they have. Maybe if you know, as we were just talking about, if the fighters had some type of association or union where they were, you know, collectively bargaining for something, it would be a little different. But as it is, I mean, this is not even all that uncommon behind the scenes where guys are saying, hey, you know, I want more for this fight or that fight. You know, I just want a title. You know, I want my pay to double. A lot of guys, you know, they win the championship and immediately they think that, you know, their life is going to change in a hugely significant way, which it does. I mean, the title does open a lot of doors. But in terms of their base pay, I mean, it does go up substantially. But the UFC wants to see that you can be a draw. Now, John has proven he can be a draw under the right circumstances with the right opponents. But I also think John has shot himself in the foot a little bit over the course of his career. And I'm not even talking about the legal issues. I mean, certainly he's hurt himself in his own personal life and his bottom line when it comes to sponsorships with some of the mistakes that he's made. But just in terms of resonating with a fan base, I mean, he has, of course. People know who he is and they consider him the greatest of all time. But, you know, some of his fights, recent fights, have not been that interesting. And he hasn't really opened himself up to let, you know, fans relate to him. You know,
yo, Lance, can you hear me?
He's one of those guys who kind of disappears in between his fights. You know, he doesn't give these long sit-down interviews. He doesn't let fans into his life a little bit. You know, I mean, he talks a little bit on Twitter, but that alone is not going to sell a bunch of pay-per-views. So I think John has kind of hurt his position in a way, because he hasn't been this wildly crazy entertainer over the last few years of his career. Now he's doing what his job is, and that's to win fights. But if you really want the big money in this sport, you also have to really entertain. You have to be a box office draw. And independently, he himself has not proven that he's just going to be this wild box office success. He's kind of, you know, it depends on who he's fighting. And I think that hurts his negotiating power a little bit.